take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
CannabisRadio.com presents The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Hey, this is great, man.
Well, on the earth.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-token lovers of liberty. It is Friday, June 17th, 2016, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the weekend, everybody. We made it. The last weekend of spring. We've got summer coming up this Monday and all sorts of amazing things happening throughout the cannabis community. This Monday in Oakland, California, the National Cannabis Industry Association is putting on its Cannabis Business Expo, and it's all up in the air right now as to whether or not I'll be there. It looks like I might have a place to stay. Now I just got to find a way to get there, and I might have the money to do it. I don't know. It's looking close. I got one check-in today. If we get the other check-in, maybe I'll be in Oakland this weekend, or this week, I should say, this following week. But we'll keep you posted, and even if we don't make it down there, we'll see if we can get some reports from what's happening at the National Cannabis Industry Association. And folks, welcome to what is a great Friday for me today, because every now and then, you get the feeling, you get some sort of response that lets you know that the work you're doing is having an impact. And today is one of those days. Coming up in our Behind the Headlines segment, I get to break for you some fantastic news about Project SAM. You know Project SAM, the Smart Approaches to Marijuana, or as I like to call it, Project Samuel, Smart Approaches to Marijuana Use Except Legalization. And as Chris Goldstein likes to say, SMART stands for Stoners Must All Receive Treatment. Anyway, the anti-pot group suffered a blow out here in the state of Oregon. It's kind of been unfolding all week. I kind of got to break some of the news that started this, and today I get to break the news that ends this. So stay tuned for that coming up right after our cannabis radio news. Also today in drug war data mining, we're going to go back to the substance abuse mental health data archives and give you a look at the aging demographics of the monthly marijuana using population. You may have heard some stories out there on the wires about how seniors are the fastest growing demographic of marijuana consumers. We're going to take a look at just the last couple of years of marijuana legalization to see what has happened as far as the use of marijuana. Who's using it more? Who's using it less? And it's all good news for us. Also coming up on the show today, we're going to do some government at work. Ethan Nadelman, the executive director of the Drug Policy Alliance, was testifying to the Senate Homeland Security Committee yesterday, and we've got the audio of his testimony. We're going to play that in Government at Work. And then in hour two in Toker Talk Radio, I'll play you some of the testimony from the anti-pot people that followed him. And we'll probably have our finger on the pause button to debunk the reefer madness in real time. So we'll have some fun in hour two with that. Also coming up at the end of this hour one, I've got time for a radical rant. We're going to take a look at Mark A.R. Kleiman, the man whose own name is a self-recursive acronym, Mark A.R. Kleiman, and he's the head of Botec, which is the consulting firm that the state of Washington spent millions of taxpayer dollars on to get consulting on how to run the marijuana market. And we're going to show you how Mark Kleiman did not learn the lessons of the Soviet economy. You younger people, the Soviets, that was Russia back in the day. We used to have a Cold War against these guys. USSR, ring a bell? Anyway, we're going to talk about that and how Mark Kleiman has created Washington in the image of the worst possible marijuana market. All that's coming up right after our Cannabis Radio News and the headlines today. We've got good news out of Congress in Washington, bad news out of Denver, Colorado, good news out of Lansing, Michigan, bad news out of San Diego, and terrible news out of Beijing, China. It's all coming up next on The Russ Belville Show.
This is The Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
earn your PhD in THC monetization with CannabisRadio.com. Don't be late.
The National Cannabis Industry Association presents the third annual Cannabis Business Summit and Expo. The most influential business event in the marijuana industry returns for 3 days in Oakland, California. Join your fellow industry leaders and policy influencers June 20th through 22nd for an in-depth educational experience and network with more than 3,000 cannabis professionals. The 2016 Cannabis Business Summit and Expo will feature keynote presentations from California Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom and NUMMI Organic Tea CEO Ahmed Rahim, giving you insight into cutting-edge policy discussions and the most innovative business practices. All this, plus the most comprehensive expo floor in the industry. The Cannabis Business Summit and Expo, June 20th through 22nd in Oakland. Don't miss out. Register right now at CannabisBusinessSummit.com and save 15% off registration using promo code RADIO15. That's CannabisBusinessSummit.com, promo code RADIO15.
Chong is ready to cut through the smoke and change the tone of Tilk Radio.
You know, during Dance with the Stars, I started feeling discomfort.
Yeah.
And not only that, I was doing these old man smells. And it was kind of embarrassing because, you know, all the Dancing with the Stars crew, cast and crew, you know, they're all young kids.
Yeah.
You know, and then all of a sudden, this old guy would come along and do one of those silent farts, you know, that you don't know you're doing it.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you smell, and everybody go, what the hell smells? And, you know, and you knew it was me. And so I'd scurry off to the bathroom, you know, and that's when I knew that there was something wrong.
The Tommy Chong Podcast, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome to my world.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
We need to build a wall.
Okay. Maybe you're high, too.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
It's time for the Cannabis Radio News. Covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Cannabis Radio News is now available exclusively at CannabisRadio.com. Now your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds. This is Cannabis Radio News.
This is your Cannabis Radio News for Friday, June 17th, 2016. Washington, D.C. Banking services for legal marijuana businesses came one step closer to becoming a reality as the Senate Appropriations Committee on Thursday passed the Financial Services and General Government Appropriations Bill. The bill contained an amendment from Oregon Senator Jeff Merkley and Washington Senator Patty Murray to allow marijuana businesses access to banking services. The amendment, which passed 16-14, would prevent federal banking regulators from prohibiting, penalizing, or discouraging a bank from providing financial services to a legitimate state-sanctioned and regulated marijuana business. It now heads to the full Senate, and if it passes there, it must be reconciled with the House version of the bill. Denver, Colorado. Pot skeptics have been cleared to start work on the most sweeping effort yet to attack Colorado's marijuana legalization. A ballot measure cleared for petitioning Thursday by the Colorado Supreme Court would set new potency and packaging limits on recreational marijuana. Under the proposal, packaging would have to include warnings that marijuana carries a risk of, quote, permanent loss of brain abilities, end quote. The measure also includes a new potency limit, meaning that popular forms of marijuana, such as vape pens and some edibles, would be illegal. Supporters of the measure say that most marijuana sold today is too strong and that current warning labels are inadequate. Marijuana industry attorneys say the measure would ban 80% of marijuana products sold today. The court's ruling clears the supporters to start collecting about 98,000 signatures to put the question on ballots. Signatures are due August 8th. Denver, Colorado. Last week, Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper signed a bill that bans the manufacture and sale of marijuana-infused gummy products shaped like humans, animals, or fruit. The new law goes into effect July 1st and is aimed at preventing the accidental ingestion of medicated gummies by children. However, the new law does still allow for the production of gummies in geometric shapes, such as stars, discs, lozenges, or even pot leaf shaped. Activists question whether the cosmetic changes will make much difference, with both anti-pot and pro-pot observers noting that an unsupervised child is just as likely to eat a gummy star as a gummy bear. Lansing, Michigan. Activists who were rebuffed in their attempt to place marijuana legalization on the ballot are suing the state of Michigan over a signature-gathering requirement that has passed to thwart their effort. MI Legalize, the group that spent $1 million collecting hundreds of thousands of signatures, has named Michigan Secretary of State Ruth Johnson, the state elections director Christopher Thomas, and the state board of canvassers as defendants in the suit. The group contends a new requirement to collect signatures within a 180-day window improperly disenfranchised the thousands who signed the petition without providing an efficient way to challenge their disqualification. The suit asks that the MI Legalized proposal be placed on the ballot and the 180-day rule be clarified. San Diego, California. A San Diego councilman is unveiling a proposed municipal ballot measure to implement an 8% tax on marijuana sales that could be adjusted upward to 15%. Councilman Mark Kersey says the tax would cover the cost of code enforcement and law enforcement with respect to marijuana commerce. Kersey's proposal applies to all marijuana sales, medical and recreational. However, if the Adult Use of Marijuana Act passes this November, it ends the taxation of medical marijuana statewide, leaving San Diego and other cities with recreational taxes only. But AUMA also establishes a statewide recreational marijuana tax of 15%. And with an 8% state sales tax, that means marijuana could end up with overall taxes in San Diego of 31 to 38%. Beijing, China. Taiwan says an American man killed himself by slashing his neck with a scissor blade inside a courtroom after being given a four-year sentence on drugs charges. 41-year-old Tyrell Martin Marhenka was rushed to the hospital, where he was pronounced dead Thursday. This has been your Cannabis Radio News for Friday, June 17th, 2016. I'm Russ Belville.
Forwarding the cause of legalization and research of the growing cannabis industry, one podcast at a time. The Cannabis Radio Network.
Play as Ted Growing, expelled botany sophomore and the biggest grower in town, only on Weed Firm Replanted. Available on the App Store and Google Play.
It's a lot of work being the biggest grower in town. Maintaining a room full of plants while dealing with a slew of eccentric customers, from a hardcore partier to the curious neighbor next door.
Is anybody home?
Help me expand my bud business by unlocking new strains, customizing my grow room, and completing challenges that you can't get enough of. Grow your empire so big you can see it from space. Low on funds? Don't worry. Weed Firm Replanted is free to download.
Download Weed Firm Replanted for free on the App Store and Google Play today. Get growing, Mr. Growing.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
With over 6 years of experience in the industry, New Era CPAs is one of the nation's leading cannabis accounting firms, helping hundreds of growers, dispensaries, and ancillary companies with their tax, legal, and business strategies. New Era CPAs offices cover the West Coast from Seattle to San Diego, and their skilled team is always available to help you take your business to the next level. Visit NewEraCPAs.com for more info and set up a consultation. Welcome to the new era.
The world of cannabis is evolving at a frenetic pace. The Russ Belville Show gets behind the headlines to take a deeper look at breaking news in our Cannabis Focus.
Today in the Cannabis Focus, we take a look back at the tragic events of this last Sunday, the massacre in Orlando, Florida at the Pulse nightclub, and how it relates to us right here in the state of Oregon and our efforts to continue the legalization of marijuana. This tragedy in Orlando was brought up by the head of Project Sam's state affiliate here in Oregon, known as Sam Oregon. And today we get to break the news that Smart Approaches to Marijuana, the anti-legalization group, headed by Kevin Sabet, known as Project Sam, has announced the resignation of their leader of their Oregon Project Sam affiliate over those comments he made comparing the legalization of marijuana to the horrific massacre in Orlando that killed 49 and wounded 53. As we reported this last Sunday, as the world was reacting to the news of the slaughter that took place at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando, the Twitter account for Sam Oregon was trolling the comments of Oregon Congressman Earl Blumenauer, my congressman. And the original comment from Congressman Blumenauer was, "Words cannot express my sorrow, disgusted by this horrific act on the LGBT community, and cowardice of those who won't pass sensible gun laws." In response to Blumenauer's statement of disgust over the shooting and the cowardice of elected officials who won't pass sensible gun laws, Sam Oregon called out the cowardice of elected officials who, quote, refuse to stand up against the marijuana industry, end quote. Sam Oregon also chided Blumenauer for supporting one, quote, threat to public health and safety, while also speaking to condemn another. His actual quote was, "You can't support one threat to public health, public safety, and then condemn another. You have failed this state." Making the direct comparison that the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction and high-capacity magazines and nut jobs that shoot up a gay club is a threat to public health and safety, like the threat to public health and safety of legalizing marijuana in Oregon. Now, Representative Blumenauer tweeted back to that it was a shameful and disgusting thing he'd said, and that there's 32,000 gun deaths in America and zero deaths from marijuana, but the die was cast. And Philbrick, the guy who heads up Sam Oregon, his name is Randy Philbrick. He's a native here of Portland, Oregon. Didn't back down. He left the comments up on his Twitter feed. Even as Tom Angel, Shailene Tidal, myself, many other drug reformers who follow those sorts of accounts kept calling him out, saying, "You want to, you know, think about this tweet you just put up?" And we brought it to the attention of the national organization of Project Sam, Kevin Sabet, the leader there. Although he wouldn't get it from me or Tom Angel, because I think he blocks the two of us, but he eventually got word, because today the leader of Sam Oregon, Randy Philbrick, resigned from the anti-marijuana group effective immediately. The text of his resignation letter reads, oh, let's see if I can get that up here. "I deeply regret my tweet this week implying any comparison between the horrible Orlando massacre and the issue of marijuana. My poor choice of words were construed as something I did not intend. Sam never sanctioned or endorsed my tweet and the opinions it expressed, and I also apologize to Sam for making comments that are not consistent with the mission or values of the organization. Effective immediately, I am stepping down from any role at Sam Oregon." But even in his resignation, he cannot take responsibility for the comments that he made, saying that they were misconstrued. These comments were not misconstrued, Mr. Philbrick. You compared a gun massacre to legalization of marijuana. nobody misconstrued anything. And if you want to read the exact conversations we had on Twitter, he's deleted the tweets since then, but they're still available up on my reporting on marijuanapolitics.com.
Oh, I could have smoked that pot.
All right, folks, it's 20 after the hour, 4:20 in the mountain time zone. So happy 4:20 to all our Rocky Mountain friends. We're going to take a break, pay some of the bills. We'll be back in 2 minutes with some drug war data mining. We're going to take a look at the aging demographics of marijuana legalization.
Next to THC and CBD, you can now add CBR to your cannabis vernacular. CBR as in cannabisradio.com.
The cannabis business industry is growing. Business is booming. And as new opportunities arise in newly legalized states, each market is getting more competitive. Today, it takes more than just being a good grower. Do you have the resources to market and handle this ever-changing business landscape? Let Canna Management Corporation help you grow your canna business with our vast resources and experience to make your business a fully functional service company. Financial management, HR, sales, marketing, efficiency, and more. CMC has the experience and the expertise to improve your business and help you better meet the demands of your clients and customers. Call Canna Management Corporation and let our team get you ready to grow. 415-269-8015. That's 415-269-8015. Or visit canna-management.com.
Educator, author, and advocate Dr. Mitch Earlywine is here to tackle the burning issues.
Author Catherine Hiller and her great new book, Just Say Yes, Marijuana Memoir. So I love the way you use time in the memoir.
I started at the present time, and I described a visit to my dealer. And then I would go backward in time so that every chapter starts a little bit earlier. I do not feel that marijuana has in any way harmed my life. It certainly hasn't led me to the streets. It's led me to a more joyful life experience.
Burning Issues, only on CannabisRadio.com.
The Russ Belville Show. Chat is for friends 18 and older. We expect our chat to be civil, mature, and free from excessive profanity. If you don't like these rules, there are approximately 6 billion other chat rooms with lower standards that you can visit.
Are you playing an acoustic guitar but want to be louder without an amp? Try a resonator guitar. The fingerboard extension has National Resophonic and other resonators, square necks and round necks. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com. Go wild hog in the woods.
Promoting the end of adult cannabis prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It's even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more on this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
Welcome back, everybody. And in the Drug War Data Mines today, we're going to take a look once again at the Substance Abuse Mental Health Services Administration and their online data files. You can find them at SAMHSA.gov/data. That's SAMHSA.gov/data. And they got all sorts of great files out there. You can look at the National Survey on Drug Use and Health, a series that goes back to the 90s, I believe, that asks people of all ages about their drug use and their mental health issues. The Drug Abuse Warning Network, which is a survey of emergency rooms and how often they deal with drug-related encounters. The Treatment Episode Data Set, both admissions and discharges, which all have to do with rehabs. the Survey of Substance Abuse Treatment Services, which is how available rehabs are, mental health services surveys, and more. There's plenty of data out there. Today, we're taking a look at the National Survey on Drug Use and Health, which on an annual basis, again, asks people of all ages about their drug use and mental health. And this is data that is accurate up to 2014. We should see the 2015 data set come out sometime this fall. So the question I wanted to solve today with the data archive is that of the aging of the marijuana legalization demographic. For a long time, we've had our opponents tell us that marijuana legalization was going to lead to more use by the children, that it would send the wrong message to the children, it would create more access for the children, we'd have more teens using marijuana and suffering all the ill effects of doing so. So I thought it would be illustrative to take a look at the data from 2012 and compare it to the data from 2014. Now, this is national level data, and there's sub-state level data, but the sub-state data isn't available up through 2014. So we're going to look at this nationally. But we wanted to see what is the effect of marijuana legalization. And by this point, we'd only have two states that are legalized through the 2014 data. So it would only reflect Colorado and Washington, which between them, I think, have about 14 million people or so. So it's not a huge impact on the rest of the United States. But I still think it's interesting to take a look at. Now, in the National Survey on Drug Use and Health, when you get to it, you can find a link that says SDA. The SDA allows you to do online data analysis. You can plug in variables from the reports, both coded variables and logical variables, which just means there's a lot of different configurations you can come up with. And once you start to learn how the variables work, you can create all sorts of interesting tables. So I've created a table using two variables. One is called MRJMON, M-O-N, and it stands for the monthly use of marijuana. So it's a yes or no variable, a zero for no, you didn't use marijuana, a one for yes, you did use marijuana. Then there's another variable called CATAG6, C-A-T-A-G-6, and it means category age recoded with six levels. Now, the six levels of ages they've got here are 12 to 17, 18 to 25, let's call it like this, 12 to 17, those are our teens, should not be smoking pot. 18 to 25, your college age, about half of them are of age, half of them below age, but I think if you're 18, you ought to be able to smoke pot. So there's our college age. Our young adults, age 26 to 34, our middle-aged people, 35 to 49, our seniors, 50 to 64, and our retirees, age 65 or older. So when we look at this data for 2012, we find that 7.3% of teens were smoking pot monthly. It was 1.8 million of them. Of the retirees, it was 0.9%, 384,000 of them. And of the seniors, it was 4.5%, or about 2.7 million. Now, when we fast forward 2 years to the 2014 information, we find that there's no more kids that are smoking pot than were before. It's still about 1.8 million of them, even though there's probably a greater population of them at this point. It's the rate is from 7.3 to 7.4, a statistically insignificant change. There's still 1.8 million teenagers smoking pot monthly. But when we look at the 65 and older, the seniors, it has gone up from 0.9 to 1.4. It's increased by half. They've gone from 384,000 to 636,000. When we look at the seniors, ages 50 to 64, we now have 3.6, almost 3.7 million, when just 2 years ago, there was 2.7 million. And again, part of that is the aging of the baby boomer demographic bubble, but in rate, it has gone up as well. It has gone up with the seniors from 4.5% of the population to 5.9% of their population. So what we found here is contrary to the fevered imaginations of the prohibitionists, the legalization of marijuana has done nothing to the teenage use. It stayed the same. And it's created a boom among people age 50 and older just in the past 2 years. Now, I think a lot of what that has to do with is the fact that the teenagers have always had their access. Under Prohibition, the teenagers have always known the high school weed dealer. They've always known where they could get some weed. But for the people 50 and older with jobs and families and wealth and freedom to have to protect, the notion of getting involved in a black market transaction is not as appealing. Now that there are legal outlets for people 50 and older to be able to get marijuana, they're taking advantage of it. Exactly as we had predicted. All right, stay tuned when we come back. It's Government at Work, Drug Policy Alliance's Ethan Nadelman testifying to a Senate committee.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Keep your cannabis cravings under control. Feed your mind with CannabisRadio.com.
The next generation of vaporizers has arrived. Vuber vaporizers are blazing the way with unparalleled technology for oil, concentrate, or dry flower pens. Providing unsurpassed customer service and expert craftsmanship, Vuber vaporizers use cutting-edge technology, providing a power-packed, smoother vapor with a lifetime guarantee. Experience vaporizing the way it was meant to be, the Vuber way.
Normal stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks are far less than those posed by legal drugs.
Get the latest updates on the Russ Belville Show by following Radical Russ on Twitter and liking the Russ Belville Show on Facebook.
Coming soon to a city near you, Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. Get all your cannabis accounting, legal, and compliance questions answered by their knowledgeable panel of industry experts who want to help your cannabis business boom. Whether you're a grower, dispensary operator, or a newcomer to the field, your cannabis business needs Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. For information on upcoming events, visit CannabisFinanceBootcamp.com.
Reforming America's marijuana prohibition laws takes education, lobbying, and voting. From Washington, D.C. to your state capitol to your city hall, marijuana law reform involves all levels of civic life. Learn how you can make your impact with elected officials as we take a look at our government at work. Today at Government at Work, we're going to look at the federal level where the Senate Homeland Security Committee heard testimony from four people about the war on drugs. Two pro, two con, I guess you'd say. And we're going to give you one of the pros. And I mean pro as in supporter and pro as in professional. It's the head of the Drug Policy Alliance, Dr. Ethan Nadelman, who, in my estimation, is one of two or three of the top speakers on our issue. We'll give you his testimony here and then some anti-testimony in hour two.
Our next witness is Dr. Ethan Nadelman. Dr. Nadelman is the founder and executive director of the Drug Policy Alliance, the leading organization in the U.S. promoting alternatives to the war on drugs. Dr. Nadelman.
Well, thank you, Senator Johnson, for initiating this roundtable and for inviting me. I've been waiting for the opportunity for a long time to share some of my thoughts with members of the U.S. Senate. Let me just be frank. I fundamentally believe that the war on drugs in this country and around the world has been a monumental disaster. It's been a disaster in public health terms, it's been a disaster in public safety terms, it's been a disaster in fiscal terms, it's been a disaster in human rights terms, right? I appreciate you bringing up the analogy to alcohol prohibition before, because, you know, you look back at alcohol prohibition. Some of what led the nation to embrace the 18th Amendment back then was the notion that alcohol was a horrific drug that was causing immense devastation in this country and what have you. And people embarked upon the experiment of national prohibition. What happened? We saw Al Capone and rising levels of organized crime. We saw all sorts of violence and bootleggers at the borders with Canada and Mexico and all around the country. We saw overflowing jail cells and courthouses. We saw hundreds of thousands of Americans being blinded and poisoned and killed by bad bootleg liquor, liquor that was more dangerous because it was illegal. We saw people talking about, you know, nullifying elements of the Bill of Rights of the U.S. Constitution. We saw levels of corruption that were unparalleled in many parts of the country. You know, we saw Chicago and other towns essentially taken over by the narco traffickers of the day, the alcohol bootleggers. And we saw a rising level of cynicism and disregard for the law. You know what else we saw? We didn't see any reduction in alcohol consumption. At the beginning, it looked like it was going to drive down alcohol use, but by the end of alcohol prohibition, alcohol use was as high at the end of alcohol prohibition as it had been at the beginning. And the major switch was that people had shifted from beer and wine to hard liquor, oftentimes underground hard liquor that was more dangerous. That's why the country came to its senses and said, enough of this, we're repealing alcohol prohibition. At the same time, many countries in Europe that were flirting with prohibition, they looked at us, they saw Al Capone, they saw all the money going down the drain, all the failures, all the hypocrisy. They said, we're not going to do that. We're going to crack down on booze with higher taxes and tougher licensing restrictions and public education campaigns. You know what happened in Europe with that? Without prohibiting alcohol, they drove down alcohol use and alcohol abuse further than we did at the beginning of alcohol prohibition in the United States. And rather than putting billions of pounds and guilders or whatever it might be into the hands of traffickers and gangsters, they put it into government treasuries. Seems to me that was the better approach then. There's a lot to be learned. Fast forward to right now. Drug prohibition has been a monumental disaster. You mentioned, you know, what's going on in Mexico and places like that. Afghanistan was going down in Colombia, parts of Central America. They are like Al Capone in Chicago times 50. It's a result of a failed prohibitionist policy. Then you look at what's happened in American prisons. What are we, less than 5% of the world's population, but almost 25% of the world's incarcerated populations, the highest rate of incarceration in the history of democratic societies, a rate of incarcerating black people in this country that puts South Africa during apartheid or the Soviet gulags to shame. It's nothing to be proud of, and it turned out to be remarkably ineffective in dealing with the problems of drug abuse. Then you look at the public health side. You know, though, when HIV started to spread among injecting drug users back in the 1980s, those countries, not just Australia and Netherlands, but Margaret Thatcher's Britain, decided that needle exchange programs were the right thing to do. They succeeded in keeping their HIV rates among injecting drug users under 5%. In America, we said, no way, no way, no way. And we ended up killing 100 to 200,000 people in this country, not just injecting drug users, but their lovers and their kids. That was a disaster as well. So I think that this war on drugs has just served this country so poorly. I think what happened is we developed an addiction. It was an addiction to drug war thinking, drug war ideology, and drug war policies. And right now, finally, thankfully, the country is finally in recovery from the drug war addiction of our past. Now, that said, in making the analogy to alcohol prohibition, I think it applies mightily to the issue of marijuana prohibition. And if I'd been coaching that 7-year-old who asked you that question that day that you spoke in that school, I would have said, you know, Senator, let me tell you something. During marijuana, I don't see any evidence that the marijuana laws are preventing young people from getting it or any evidence of preventing older people from getting it. All I see is evidence that it's putting a lot of people in jail and costing the government a lot of money. Do you still support a marijuana prohibition policy, knowing that it's been totally ineffective? But with the other drugs, I think this is the way to think about it. And I'm going to conclude my comments with this. I think the best drug policy, what it tries to do is it starts with the understanding that there's never been a drug-free society, more or less in human history. And there's never going to be a drug-free society. If anything, we're going to see more drugs, legal, illegal, in between, gray market in the future, from pharmaceutical companies, underground manufacturers, you name it. Therefore, our challenge is not to try to keep drugs at bay, to build a wall or a moat between this country and others, between our schools and what have you. That's failed. The evidence is in. What we have to do is accept the fact, sadly, that drugs are here to stay and that our great challenge is to learn how to live with them, so they cause the least possible harm and in some cases the greatest possible good. Therefore, think about drug policy in the two following ways. The first is that the optimal drug policy should try to do two things. It should seek to reduce the negative consequences of drug use, the death, the disease, the crime, and the suffering, the devastation of families and individuals and communities. It should seek to reduce the harms of drugs. And secondly, It must seek to reduce the harms of government policies, reduce the mass incarceration and the drug gangs out abroad and all of the negative health consequences and violations of civil liberties and human rights. The optimal drug policy is the one that most successfully reduces both the harms of drugs and the harms of government policies. And the second frame, and I'll finish with this, I think it's helpful. Because all change essentially is incremental in these areas and most others, is to think about our options as arrayed along a spectrum. From the most punitive drug policies on the one hand, the Saudi Arabia, Singapore, you know, Malaysia, cut off your hands, execute you, lock them up, drug test you without cause, and throw you into what are called treatment camps, they're really prisons, all the way down to the most free market, Milton Friedman-esque, you know, policies with no restrictions except, you know, to keep kids away. The way we need to think about drug policy is moving down this spectrum from the highly punitive over-reliance on the criminal law and the criminal justice institutions, moving incrementally, step by step, down this spectrum, but stopping short at the point at which going any further would actually entail real risk to public health or public safety. And it means being driven by the evidence of the sort that Dr. McDonald just referenced to. When the evidence shows that mandatory minimum sentences are not having an effective deterrent impact, then it's time to reform or to repeal those. When the evidence shows that marijuana has useful medical purposes, it's time to acknowledge that. When the evidence shows that providing sterile syringes to injecting drug users through pharmacies or needle exchange programs reduces the spread of HIV/AIDS and Hep C without increasing drug use, it's time to do that. When the evidence shows that methadone maintenance and buprenorphine maintenance are successful in reducing the harms of addiction and helping people get their lives together, it's time to do that. When the evidence shows that heroin maintenance and safe injection sites reduce all sorts of harms and produce a net benefit, it's time to do that. With marijuana legalization, we'll see. My judgment is that the net benefits of moving the direction of the sensible regulation of marijuana exceed the risks. That's a judgment, and we'll see how that works out, but I think that the evidence overwhelmingly suggests the right way to go. With the other drugs, we need to move towards a decriminalization public health approach and focus, and this is what I'll do in my comments later, on reducing the demand and the magnitude for demand in these drugs. So long as there is a demand, there will be a supply. Pouring money into supply just pushes it from one place to another, like trying to bang down on mercury or step down on a balloon. It's about reducing demand in ways that are driven by the evidence and respect for basic human decency. Thank you.
That's Drug Policy Alliance Executive Director Ethan Nadelman speaking to the U.S. Senate's Homeland Security Committee. We've got more of that testimony from the Homeland Security Committee. We're going to hear some of the anti-testimony. And we'll definitely have our finger on the pause button so we can hack it up. But that's coming up in hour two. Coming up next, we've got time for a radical rant. We're going to take a look at Washington State and how Mark Klyman has instituted a Soviet economy in the marijuana markets in Washington State. We're back in just 2 minutes. Stick around.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
From dabs to chivas, sativas to indicas, we roll out a whole concentrate of fresh new content every week. It's like going from the greenhouse to the dispensary. CannabisRadio.com.
Dr. Dabber, hurry! Its temperature is shooting past 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. It's burning up.
I'm afraid for this little guy, it's just too late.
What caused the problem?
Only Dr. Dabber can maintain the perfect temperature for a smooth-tasting, slower burn. This standard vaporizer lost all of its health benefits, sending it up in smoke.
So you're telling me that most vapor pens burn so hot they produce smoke, not vapor?
Correct. Keep away from those standard vaporizer pens and turn to Dr. Dabber. Doctor's orders.
Less heat? More flavor.
Doc Rob, the concierge for better living.
Cannabis is just one of the many great plants that we have on this planet called Earth.
that we can use consciously and intelligently to improve our well-being.
Take a real, raw, inside look at healthier living while sharing great ideas and improvements for a better quality of life.
Learning to live and live well is a lifelong process. This is a journey. You could be 80 years old or 8 years old. You can still learn something that's going to make tomorrow a little bit healthier, a little bit easier, a little bit happier, a little bit better.
The Concierge for Better Living with Doc Rob. Only on CannabisRadio.com.
Warning. Hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals, or at least they pay me to say that. A public service message from CannabisRadio.com and the Russ Belville Show.
Get .buzz. .buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. .buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. .buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. .buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz.
We must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical Rant.
Today in the Radical Rant, I want to take a look just north of me into Washington State, one of the four currently legal states, and by far the worst marijuana legalization scheme yet implemented in the United States. Now, understand that comes with a caveat that even the worst marijuana legalization scheme in the United States is 100 times better than the best decriminalization. Okay, so let's make sure that we all understand that I would still vote for I-502. I would still want marijuana to be legalized in the state of Washington. But what has happened since it's been legalized can be traced mostly to the wisdom, if you call it that, of one man, the former UCLA public policy professor, and I think he's currently at NYU, Professor Mark Kleiman, Mark A.R. Kleiman. He was contracted by the state of Washington at much taxpayer expense for his company, Botec Analysis, to provide guidance on how to run Washington's marijuana market. Now, understand that Washington's I-502 was championed and supported mostly by people who aren't pot smokers. And I don't mean the electorate. I mean the leaders of the campaign. The night that I-502 passed in 2012, I was in Seattle with the leadership of the campaign, and they were all toasting with cocktails and beers. There was no pot smoking in celebration of just having legalized pot smoking. So you got to understand, we're talking about a law that was crafted by people who don't smoke marijuana themselves, and then they contract with not only a guy who doesn't smoke marijuana himself, but also a guy who thinks that the smoking of marijuana ought to be discouraged by the state. So with that background of having a bias in favor of reducing consumption, you end up with a consultation that recommends all of these controls and restrictions on the market to discourage consumption. And that, of course, is not necessarily what's best for the consumers. And this all tracks down to what Mark Kleiman decided should be established for Washington State, and that is a Soviet Union-style centrally planned economy. The idea was, under Kleiman, and I'll give you Kleiman's quote here, if I can find it in the piece that I'm reading, that the free market... This is a quote from Kleiman. The free market is an excellent system for maximizing consumption. That's why I don't want to apply it to this product. I wouldn't want that system for alcohol either, but we lost that battle. End quote. Yeah, that's right, folks. If Mark Kleiman had his way, not only would he set up a restrictive quota-based system for marijuana, he'd do the same for alcohol. If he could wave a magic wand and make it happen, he'd make your alcohol more expensive and more difficult to acquire. So the only problem with that, of course, is making the alcohol more difficult to acquire would actually have a beneficial public policy angle, in that alcohol is an extremely harmful drug to the people who use it and those of us who don't. Wanting to set up a system to discourage the use of marijuana, especially a situation where they might use that instead of alcohol, has a counterproductive, a negative public policy effect. But anyway, this central planning, what it was that the state would estimate how much marijuana is consumed, how big is the market, that is, in marijuana in the state of Washington, and then decide based on that how much marijuana should be grown and how many retail outlets there should be. And of course, the beginning of this, when this first happened, they predicted quite badly. Because how do you estimate a black market? You really have no idea what's going on. You can take surveys, you can take polls, because it's illegal, you're not necessarily getting accurate responses. And then on top of that, a gray market, quasi-legal, highly successful medical marijuana system, at least from the consumer's point of view, with active gray market dispensaries. And how do you get good estimates of all that as well? The BOTEC people mentioned this themselves in saying that the feasibility range covers as low as $60 million and as high as $740 million. So that's quite a margin of error from 60 to 740. Quite a margin of error, but they decided that they could nail it down. And so what they did is when they first established how many licenses there'd be, they set it at 334 marijuana licenses for retail outlets. And then they set a overall canopy, I think it was like 2.1 million square feet. So all the grows in the state could not total more than that. And in the beginning, this led to ridiculously high prices in the state of Washington. $25 a gram, $30 a gram, insane prices. And on top of that, he recommends a insanely high tax. Now, it did go from three levels of 25% to one level of 37%, but that's still the highest marijuana tax in the nation. And this is because Mark Kleiman wants to discourage people from consuming cannabis. He wants to keep the price high as a deterrent from you smoking too much. So eventually this has worked out. Eventually the growers have adjusted, and we've had more of them, and they've increased their production. And now the prices in Washington state are down to about less than $10 a gram on average at the retail, less than $3 a gram on the wholesale level. So the market, even as restricted as it has been under this Soviet-style central planning, has found a way to adjust. And now we've got prices down to where they're some of the lowest prices in the nation. Well, that's a bad thing for people like Mark Kleiman, who think that, again, we ought to be punished, we ought to be dissuaded from consuming cannabis. So now, enter the Washington State Legislature, which has kind of gone along with all of these BOTEC things, because also the Washington State Legislature doesn't want marijuana commerce. So they've done every bad faith negotiation and move they could to try to stymie not only the recreational market's development, but to also undercut and destroy as much of the medical side as they could, so as to eliminate competition for the recreational side that they're taxing at 37%. So this has led to the elimination of collective gardens in Washington state, where 10 patients could collectively cultivate 45 plants. That's going away. It's led to the merging of the retail dispensaries and retail pot shops. And in doing so, Botec has recommended the cap be raised to 556 total stores. But what that's ignoring is how many of these dispensaries are going out of business that had been supplying the market. Let's take a look at Tacoma, Washington, right there south of Seattle. Tacoma, Washington, according to the News Tribune in Tacoma, has said that last summer there were close to 70 dispensaries in Tacoma. And this was just supplying the medical marijuana market, 70 dispensaries. But now with this new SB 5052 passing in Washington State, they all have to be licensed, and there's a cap on how many retailers can be in Tacoma. And that cap is 16. 16 stores to take over a business. And remember, we're going from 70 stores that were handling just medical consumers to now just 16 stores to handle all those medical consumers and the additional recreational consumers coming in. And they think that can work? Well, no. All that can do is, once again, create an artificial scarcity that raises the price of cannabis. And the extra hoop they have to jump through now, there's a city ordinance in Tacoma that requires all of the pot shops to get a medical endorsement if they want to provide medical cannabis. So at every stage here, the well-intentioned I-502 that was, hey, let's legalize marijuana for everyone, has turned into, okay, well, if we're going to legalize marijuana for everyone, we're going to make it as bad as we can. We're going to make as many bad regulations, as many bad laws, and as many bad centrally planned Soviet-style economic decisions as we can. And what a terrible, terrible government going on there in Washington State doing this to the cannabis consumers of the state. And a lot of this, you can point it straight at Mark Klyman. Again, a guy who doesn't want marijuana to be consumed. Now, he's one of these guys, he's kind of like a Kevin Sabet, like these third way guys that will agree with you that prohibition sucks. He'll agree that prohibition sucks. It's terrible. It's awful. We shouldn't be criminalizing people. But he wants to make it so that marijuana is still dirty and bad and socially frowned upon and sin taxed and expensive, and there to be all sorts of coercion and incentive for the cannabis consumers to give up their dirty, awful, evil, terrible habit. He would have state stores if he could, rather than just, you know, licensed businesses doing it. But the problem that Klyman ignores in all of this is that the more you try to centrally plan and the more you thwart the market, the more the market continues to thrive. It just is a black market. It's like Jeff Goldblum in Jurassic Park. Life finds a way. Well, supply and demand finds a way too. And when you continue to advocate for these ridiculously high taxes, to advocate that a town like Tacoma that had 70 shops be restricted to just 16, then you ought to be getting a thank you note from the illegal growers and dealers in the state of Washington. Thank you for helping to maintain artificial restrictions, prohibition-like incentives for us to get involved. Taxes so high, we can undercut them. Locations so few, we can still be considered convenient. I mean, we don't need to speculate about this. We can see this in other situations. Look at New York City. A pack of smokes in New York City costs $12. That's because New York has passed all of these nanny state super high sin taxes to dissuade people from smoking cigarettes. It's a what about the children thing. If we make the price of smokes real high, kids will stop smoking. But the unintended consequence of that is you make the price of cigarettes so high, it's worth selling loose, untaxed cigarettes. And it's a confrontation over loose, untaxed cigarettes that got Eric Garner choked out by the NYPD. Why can't we learn these lessons of prohibition? Well, I can tell you why. Because it's a moral thing. It's a culture thing. This has nothing to do with intelligence or looking at the past and drawing reasonable conclusions. It has to do with the fact that people like Mark Kleiman think potheads are bad, think pot is bad, and therefore cannot see the forest for the trees. They cannot see the logic of just letting the market determine what happens with marijuana. It ain't alcohol. That's all the time for Hour 1. Thanks for joining us. Stay tuned for Hour 2. I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.